This is a Pod Dealers Network podcast.
Usually I try to start these things off with a story or a joke, but nothing really funny today. So I thought we'd just do a moment of silence for the people that we lost and hopefully for a prayer that we can all heal. Thank you.
What is TWS podcast episode whatever? Who cares at this point?
Bar.
The rant, the vindicated.
It's my podcast. I do what I want to.
People, listen.
Word, is it still alive?
It's not working for me, Rip. We're going to keep going.
I know I changed my voice at work.
Bars on the radio.
What is TWS podcast?
When's ready.
I feel like the end is
staring at my watch and I'm feeling so new school.
Suicide attempts, how many tries to take?
Damn, they ain't ready.
Sometimes I look at my skin like it's a gift and a curse. Courtesy of Curtis Mayfield, the people darker than blue. Before I'm a human, a man, I'm barely even a you. Barely believe the things and the scenes we see in the news. They shoot you instead of putting your head inside of the noose. They play it on repeat so your eyes get desensitized to the crime they commit. Looking for prints or sign of the times in the back of my mind. Asking you blind, deaf, or you dumb? You don't know the difference between wild and skittles and guns. You can kill us on the camera and they won't believe us. Why you calling them the officers? They overseers.
Overseers. Man. All right, welcome to another episode of the What Is TWS podcast. As always, I'm your boy, J.Dot Flan. I have a special guest with me for this episode. We're just going to talk shop, have a real conversation about what's really going on. Trying to figure out how I'm going to introduce my guest. He just informed me not too long ago that there's a generational gap. So I will say he's much younger than I am. One of my roommates, fitness guru. I'm going to pick his brain eventually on how to get rid of his dad bod. But I got my homie Isaiah with me today.
What's up, Jared? Happy to be here.
Oh, man. Appreciate you. Man, you want to tell the people a little bit about yourself before we get into it?
Yeah, sure. No problem. So my name is Isaiah Robinson. I've been in, Austin, Texas about 4 months now, originally from Illinois. Grew up in a pretty affluent suburb, Naperville, Illinois. But I lived all over the country through my youth. Spent some time in Pennsylvania, New York. But I came to Austin pretty recently. Trying to start off on the right foot, start new in life, a new start. Fitness, like you said, that's been a big passion for me. I've been pretty active down here, but I'm glad to be on this podcast and talk about what's been going on in the recent events in the world, because I think it's an opportunity to really speak on something that's been going on for a long time. And like you said, there's a generational gap, but we can...
We're not going to keep talking about it.
Right. We could definitely, relate on many levels.
Cool. All right. So then, man, I guess, just get right into it. Like, the elephant in the room. I've been talking about it on the podcast for a couple of weeks now. Just waking up every morning on social media and seeing everything that's going on. We had the situation in Indianapolis. We had the situation with Breonna Taylor. We had the Ahmaud Arbery. There's that situation that we talked about just a little while ago with Amy Cooper. Mm-hmm. And then, most recently, it seems we have the George Floyd situation where we have, a man in handcuffs on the ground with a knee in his neck for, I think, somewhere around 9 minutes until,
7, 8, 9 minutes.
Yeah, until he eventually lost his life. And and we see how the country is reacting. So, I don't know. Let's get your initial thoughts on what you saw and how it made you feel.
Yeah, so most recently with the George Floyd incident, I remember, that day I came home and I saw, the first initial post about, I think it was on Sean King's Instagram, but I saw, what looked like another police brutality case. I was like, my first reaction was like, shit, another one. Like, that was I think that says something. That was my first initial response. But I don't know, for some reason I opened it up and I watched the video, and just seeing how everything played out, I mean, immediately I knew this was something different, because like I noticed that in a lot of these cases, the focus was on, it was kind of like a he said, she said what happened before this video, but regardless of what happened before the camera started rolling, you obviously see that, you know, George Floyd was killed on camera, unresponsive for what, 6 minutes, with a knee in his neck. Bystanders, you know, trying to do something, knowing they couldn't make an approach, you know, out of fear. Immediately I knew it was something different. Like, just you saw on camera that there's something, an underlying factor that needs to be talked about.
Yeah. I mean, and to be honest with you, I have not watched the video, and I think I made like the conscious decision not to. I didn't want to see it. I like the fact that you use the word, you know, killed. But I think what gets lost a lot of times in these videos and these things that we see is that like a person died, like a person is gone, no longer here. Like, I think I saw a photo today of George Floyd, you know, with his kid, and like we forget sometimes that like beyond the whole impact of you know, is this police brutality and is this some larger social issue, you know, at the end of the day, you know somebody doesn't have a dad anymore, you know, somebody lost a son, somebody lost a brother, a friend, and these people will never be heard from again. You know, you can't hug them one more time, you know, whatever impact they could have had on this world, you know, through their actions going forward has been negated, you know, for whatever reason. And if it, you know, I don't know, man. I didn't want to watch the video, and I haven't watched the video. So a lot of my opinion on it, you know, to be honest, is coming third party from people who have watched the video and their thoughts and things I've heard. But yeah, man, I couldn't bring myself to actually watch it.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking the moment of silence, because like you said, it's someone's life lost. Yeah. And I agree. It's like it has been desensitized in our society, just death in general. You know, at the end of the day, this someone took their last breath, and you know, their soul, their spirit, however you want to put it, it's no more in this realm. I think a lot of that is overlooked.
Yeah.
Immediately to the, you know, all the debating, the arguing, you just overlooked that point. But yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, and the debating, I think, you know, and we talked a little bit about this before we started recording, but like that is what I think is like the larger overarching issue. That is the problem, is that, you know, not only does this happen and it shouldn't happen, but every time it does happen, we tend to have to spend the first part of, you know, the recovery or the healing trying to convince half the country that something bad happened. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a whole group of people who don't necessarily see a problem with what happened. You know, there are people, we have to debate with folks over whether or not a life being taken for something trivial. I mean, if I think they say that the crime that they were called out there for was, you know, possible forgery or something like that, which don't carry a death sentence. You know, it absolutely doesn't carry a death sentence. You know, whatever you think Ahmaud Arbery was or wasn't doing, that also doesn't carry a death sentence. These weren't armed individuals. They weren't posing an immediate threat to anyone, you know, and their lives were taken. And it's just weird to me that, like, you have to convince someone that was wrong,
right?
Like, before we can even, that's what makes it seem like there's no, that's what makes it seem like the road forward to finding some peace or finding some solution or finding some change in this is so difficult. Cause how do you convince someone to change if you first can't even convince them that they did something wrong?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, like growing up, that was a thing. I'm trying to figure out if I should tiptoe around it. So with my dad, one of the issues my mom used to have with my dad was that he didn't think he did anything wrong. Mm-hmm. And for her, it was like, there's no point in having a conversation with him because he didn't think he did anything wrong. And I think when you see the reaction that we're seeing right now with people, you know, protesting and what's happening in the streets is I'm not saying this is the mentality of everyone. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's some people that are taking advantage of the situation, but I'm sure you do have a large group of people that are, you know, are at the point where what's the point of having a conversation? What's the point of trying to legislate this? What's the point of any of it? You know, when we can't even convince these people they did anything wrong.
Right. Yeah. And just like I said, like seeing that video, I honestly thought that, you know, just the evidence in the video was enough to show to skip over all the debate of if, you know, if anything was done wrong, if there was like outside circumstance. I thought all of that would be, you know, overlooked and we could just talk about the issue because of how, you know, real that video was. It just showed, you know, pure hatred. But still, I mean, 48 hours after seeing the video, I see people dissecting it, you know, trying to figure out where they can, you know, defend the cop. Right. Or, yeah, it's just crazy that, I mean, no matter what, there's always going to be a hindrance before we try to get to resolve or some type of consensus. And if a certain group of people, you know, are so focused on disproving it, I mean, you do get that way sometimes. Is it even worth fighting for? Yeah. But I think we're seeing that it's definitely worth fighting for, seeing what's been going on in the world.
But yeah, it comes to a point where you don't want to have a conversation anymore. And, you know, we talked about there being a generational gap, but all of these situations always remind me of the OJ trial, right? And this is a strange segue, but you gotta work. You gotta stay with me, right? So, I mean, black people in this country have had a feeling as if they're at opposition with authority or the police for a long time, you know. And it seems like every time we try to express that, there's some disconnect in the way police or law enforcement treats us, and that there is, you know, police brutality, and there's discrimination and discriminatory policies and a system of racist policies or racist attitudes, mm-hmm. Toward us through law enforcement. You know, people, we get, for the lack of a better term, gaslighted, like, nah, it's just a couple bad apples, or it's, you know, nah, you know, it's, you know, but it's not a systemic issue. You have bad people in any group or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then things come out, and it's proven. And then if enough time goes by and it happens again, like, we got to prove it all over again. And like when I said with the OJ trial, we had this, you know, we had this idea that, yeah, maybe there's some corrupt police in the LAPD, and that, you know, sometimes they try to do these things. And and then we have Mark Furman on tape. So I don't know if you remember any of this, you know, if this was before your time.
Before
or not.
My time.
I think it was, because I think we talked about, like, you being born a year I graduated from high school.
Yeah, man.
And I'm pretty sure I remember this stuff. I remember being in high school when the verdict came down. But anyway, we had Mark Furman on tape talking about the policies within the LAPD and how they were told to go to certain areas and bust heads and, you know, and stuff like that, and how they would target certain groups. And that you knew there was not going to be any sort of consequences, mm-hmm. for actions you took against certain groups. We got this on tape. We got a police officer confessing that it extends beyond just his personal beliefs, mm-hmm. and that it actually was the system itself instructing him that this was okay to act this way. And then, you know, and then not saying whether OJ did it or not, but that's not my point.
Mm-hmm, right.
But, you know, we had proof. And then, you know, fast forward some years later when, you know, Tamir Rice happens and Trayvon Martin happens. It's like we got to go back through the whole conversation again. Like you don't realize this has been a problem.
Right.
You know, and we get we get gaslit again. It's just a few bad apples, you know. Mm-hmm. There's no, I think one of Trump's advisors was on TV earlier today saying he doesn't believe it's a systemic issue. But we're talking about in the last, couple of weeks, we got several different states, mm-hmm. you know. And the instance with Ahmaud Arbery, I think the father of the dude that shot him was a ex-police officer.
I believe so.
Yeah. And then they have they pretty much have text messages between the property owner of the house that Ahmaud, you know, must have walked through that they were saying was the reason that they were after him or whatever. But they got text messages from him and the police pretty much telling him, oh, you got an ex-cop that lives in your neighborhood. If you have issues, go to him. Mm. You know, so that one also is still it's still the system. It's still, it's not these individual
right. people. It's something that's ingrained
yeah.
into people's thought process. Like that's what they, you know, that's what they can use to their advantage, or that's just how it is. It's been like that for years, and it's crazy. Like at the end of the day, it's like some people realize that they can use someone else's race, someone else's color, kind of as a threat or a way to keep them oppressed.
Yeah.
Use it to their advantage, I guess, lack of a better term.
So, yeah, we talked earlier about, you know, our different experiences growing up,
mm-hmm.
both being black, if y'all didn't know. issues with our names. Maybe the way we speak, you know, whether or not we're readily identified as black, if you can't see us, kind of situation. And then our backgrounds as far as, you know, involving other races and having to navigate, you know, those worlds, you know. With all of this happening, you know, like what do you think you take from your background, to help you understand like how to move forward in a situation like this.
Mm-hmm. So growing up, like I said earlier, it was in a pretty affluent white suburb. I grew up, I would say, upper middle class, and I know I was fortunate to have both of my parents in the house, married, still together. I had good opportunities, and you know, just growing up in that town, they're definitely on a day-to-day basis, just, you know, being black, being a minority, definitely was something that, you know, hit home every day or something I dealt with every day. But at the same time, like over time, you just accept it as a part of life. But I mean, in terms of like racism, I've seen it in that community, you know. It's like, once again, it gets overlooked. I feel like it's just something that's individual racism, like person to person. They have, whether they are vocal about it or they just have a prejudice towards you. You kind of see that over time, that like this, whatever it is, whatever system, whatever, how it's passed down from generation to generation, you know, being black in America, no matter, you know, what class you fall into or whatever in society, it's a day-to-day struggle. I mean, when I think back about like early in my youth, I mean, it just takes me back to like elementary school, middle school, like sitting at the cafeteria tables and like, you know, you pull up, you're like one of the only black kids and people sitting there asking you like about the N-word, you know. Yeah. can you say nigga? Is it okay for me to say nigga? If not, can I say that but not ER? Like stuff like that. Like and that was in any state I was in, Pennsylvania, New York, Illinois. Like I guess the term token black kid, right?
Yeah.
Like just because of sports, because of just athletics, I guess people gravitated towards me as a like the black male in school, but at the same time, you know, they had a lot of questions for me. Like at a young age, people touching my hair, saying, "Wow, your hair feels like sheep hair. Like, what, like, what is that, bro? Like, can I touch your hair? Oh my gosh, it feels like a pillow. So cool. Or like black jokes in the cafeteria. Like I said, yeah. Like, that was everywhere. I would pull up to the table and these kids would be like, Isaiah. Or as a group, all these white kids across from you at the table. Let's tell you our favorite black jokes, what we've heard. Like, damn. Shit like, how come black people are so good in the NBA? Because they can run, shoot, and steal. Like, damn. And I've heard that one so many times. It's like not even funny.
Damn, and That's my first.
Yeah, that's the first time you heard it?
Yeah, I'm going to keep that one.
Yeah, and just like the N-word, like, especially being growing up in Naperville, just I don't understand why, you know, white kids want to say nigga so bad.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing, like, I don't even think they understand the history of the word. Like, me personally, I don't use it in my day-to-day vernacular, and I don't think, you know, it should be used, honestly, as often as it is. But why is it so cool to say nigga, and why do you have to feel...
Why you feel the need to say it?
Like, what is that?
Like, you being deprived of something, right? You can't say it too.
I got stories, man. I got stories for days about just little right. racist kids.
Right. I'm gonna tell a story. I guess the opposite perspective. So, like, I grew up in a middle class sort of neighborhood, but typically went to school. So, to explain the story a little bit, like, I grew up in like the suburbs of DC in Maryland, and but DC schools, it was less racism in DC schools, and it was more opportunities, like, you know. So I went to DC schools all the time, and a lot of the schools I went to may be considered inner city or whatever you want to call it. But I remember being a kid, like, I mean, elementary school age, like probably younger to second grade. And so the school I went to was all black, pretty much. And there was this one kid, and I don't even think he was white. I think he was just light enough to pass.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember his mother coming to school every once in a while, and she had a heavy accent. So she might have been like from somewhere in South America or something like that. But she was really light, and, you know, and he was too. So we treated him like he was white. And so he was the white kid at the black lunch table.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I'm not proud of this, Isaiah. I'm not proud of this at all. But this is what we used to do to him at the lunch table, like every day, for as long as I could remember. It'd be all of us sitting there and just him. And we go, we'd be sit at the table and we would sing this song, man. We'd sing, I's nigga, he's nigga, she's nigga, we's nigga, wouldn't you like to be's a nigga too? So I had, saying it now, like, I realized, like, how demeaning it was to us.
Mm-hmm.
Like that whole I's a, we's a, you know.
Right.
You know. But I know we were using it at the time to isolate him, make him feel different. And we're still friends on Facebook now. Sometimes I'd be like, I should hit him up. Like, dude, what was that like, bro? Like, what did you go through? but yeah, I don't know. I guess in those situations it can kind of go both ways. But I can see how that could make, like, a person want to say nigga. Like, if your whole life you was told, like, we all niggas and that's cool, and you not one of us, like, you just want to be invited to the cool table.
Be one of the bros.
One of the bros one day. But yeah, other than that, I guess I don't get it why they feel like they're being denied something, you know, if they can't use it. I mean, I understand the pop culture thing. I got mad at, I don't know if you remember this, but a year or two back, Kendrick Lamar had a concert. And I can't remember the song. I know the song was like, oh, nah, is it the Man Down, Where You From, nigga?
Oh, fuck, yeah, who, Mad City.
Mad City.
Yeah.
I think they was doing that song, and he invited a white girl up on stage to sing the song with him. And then when she started actually saying the word, like, the crowd turned, and when the crowd turned, like, he kind of turned. And he said something after it, like, she should have known better. I'm like, dog, you didn't realize what was getting ready to happen, dog? Like, you think they don't say it when they sing that shit in their bedrooms?
In the concerts, like, yeah.
Like, she thought she was invited to the cool right. table, and she had a pass. Like,
got excited.
She got set up. So I don't know. I guess I'm trying to give a little devil's advocate on that that situation, but nah, I don't think. And we were talking about this earlier. I don't think like they don't have a perspective on what it's like when your skin color alone like determines how the world reacts to you.
Right.
Like I was telling you, like in Austin, and Austin to me is a very progressive city.
Right.
I don't at least see a lot of issues with race. I haven't experienced them. But even here, like if I'm walking downtown and I have my hands in my pocket, like I become acutely aware that I have my hands in my pocket and that I need to be careful about how I take my hands out my pocket, or maybe my hands shouldn't be in my pocket because it looked like I got something. Like, and I don't think, I hate the term they too, but I don't think the other side, maybe I don't know. I'm coming
my
up
white counterparts.
My white counterparts understand that, like, that's a reality. Like, do you walk down the street and worry about where your hands are?
Right.
Do you walk down the street and worry about whether it's late and the only other person coming down the street is a white woman and how she might feel when you're approaching her? Should I cross the street to make her feel? Like, these are real life decisions that I make. Like, maybe I should cross the street so it doesn't feel like she's being approached by this dude. And you know me, I'm a 5'9", maybe, you know, I don't want to tell my weight because I'm a little heavier than I should be. We're going to work on that, though.
I got a routine for you.
There we go. But, you know, I'm not an imposing figure, you know, by any stretch of the imagination, but I have to worry about that. Like, I have to worry about how I'm perceived just purely based on my, you know, on my skin color. Like, if they knew my name, they might be, oh, nah, he ain't no threat.
if they read your resume.
They read my resume, yeah. Like, if I could paste that shit to my shirt or something, like, this is who I am. Like, this is everything you need to know about me. But that's not how decisions are made.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I've definitely seen that. Just being in public places, like upscale restaurants. I've been in an upscale restaurant in New York City, and I was sitting there with my dad. We were just having a conversation, and I mean, I noticed this woman, her purse was on the ground to the right of her. We're in a booth next to her, and she makes it a point to look back, lift her purse up, put it on the opposite side away from our view. I don't know. But I mean, like, and that's just one incident. Like, there's a lot of times. I mean, specifically, like, with the city I grew up in, the town I grew up in, you know, just you can tell when someone in public looks at you, you know, with the prejudice, or just you could tell when you get that look. Like, okay, I'm on guard, or like, okay, what is this black guy up to? Yeah. Like, and then you kind of feel out of place, like you don't have a right to be there, but like, why don't I? Just because of the color of my skin, why do you have to feel, I guess, threatened just by my presence? It's a lot to think about, but I mean, like 21 years of life, I've had a lot of time to think about it and experience it still.
21 years.
Man.
Nah, but I think that's the part about, like, when people have the discussions about white privilege, I think that's the part that if some people I'm around don't get, that white privilege isn't always something that you're given. Like, you're not given this advantage, or like, you don't get something on top of what you already have. White privilege can sometimes just be the fact that something isn't taken away from you. Like, your concept of safety, or your concept of comfort. Like you said, like, you go places and you feel this sense of discomfort, you know, just based off how you look. And if you can live a life and you never have to feel that, that's the privilege that we're talking about. Not like somebody gave something to you, but just you don't have to deal with these thoughts or these looks. Have you ever been in one of them situations where somebody clutched their purse and then, like, that made you want to do something? Like, you know, like, you had no, you weren't even paying attention to that person. Like, I didn't even realize you had a purse.
Right,
and
right. That you, like, you weren't even on my mind.
You weren't even on my mind. Like, I was thinking about some other shit. I was thinking about this job interview I got to go to and I got to fix my voice for. But, Yeah, I was thinking about some other shit. That,
changing the voice up.
You clutched your purse. Now I want to be like, you know what, motherfucker? All right. First of all, white ladies, I'm sorry. If you in close proximity with somebody that's going to take something from you, mm-hmm. if they already have it on their mind, I'm going to take it. What does clutching it do? Now I have to hurt you to take it. Like, that's the only thing that you've changed. You have not changed the fact that they want to take it because they was mm-hmm. going to take it from you. Clutching just means now I got it. Like, mm-hmm. I might have to hurt you a little bit to get it.
It's like monsters under the bed and you go hide under the covers. Like, what
the cover's going to do? Now you can't see the motherfucker coming. at least be aware of what's going on. I don't know. That probably was wrong. I just wanted to go down that road real quick.
I know what you mean, though. There's times it's not even on my mind. I'm not even being mindful at the time about just how my presence can put someone at discomfort, but you see someone's reaction.
Yeah.
Like just working downtown a lot this past couple weeks, I've been downtown. I pull up, get out the car, I'm in a nice neighborhood, and people just, give me a look away real quick. And then I'm like, damn, I'm just trying to get to my job. But at the same time, when they react like that, it's like, you want me to be what, the black person you think I, or like that stigma you have towards me? Okay, I'm going to poke my chest out and give you that look. Like, honestly, sometimes that does come up. Like, when it catches me off guard, it's like, if you really have that, preconceived notion about me, it's like, man, it kind of, kind of gives me a little boost. Like, maybe, like, people are afraid of me for no reason.
Yeah, yeah. I think on the, on that Add 2 album, so Add 2, the artist, I played at the intro, has an album, Jim Crow the Musical, which is really dope. And I think it speaks a lot. It's sad that like art and stuff that's made years ago, that album, I think is maybe 2 or 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But you can go back way further now. You can play some NWA stuff and it's like still as applicable today as right. it was when it was written, which is a sad commentary
mm-hmm.
On the state of the country. But, on the Add 2 album, he talks about like, the fact that some people look at me like I'm a monster, he's like, that gives me a little bit of power, right?
Right. Weird sense.
In a weird sense.
You feel, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I used to ride the subways and just, I'd ride the subway on what I knew was like the white section of the subway. And sometimes, yeah, I would just sit and like, once I saw that you were uncomfortable, it's like, all right, now I'm going to give you a reason to be uncomfortable. I'm a nice watch. How much that cost? What size shoes are those?
Oh, that's a good point. Listen. If anyone ever asks you what shoe size you are, you just tell them, my size. That's all you leave them with.
Hey, all right. So that's how naive I was. That's how lack of like street knowledge mm-hmm. I have. So I'm working at this hospital as a teenager. And I'm coming out of this hospital, Greater Southeast Hospital, Southeast DC. And I'm coming out of the hospital at night to go home from work. One of my friends from school is there too because he's working.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting at the bus stop waiting on my bus. And this dude comes down and sits next to me. And he's talking to my friend because I think it's like my friend's uncle or something like that. And eventually, he starts talking to me. And he's like, oh man, those are nice shoes. What size are those? And I'm getting ready to answer because I'm like, I don't know no better. Like, I'm like, oh, you interested in my shoes? Like, I'm proud of my shoes. Like, yeah, these. I'm about to stick my foot out and show them all these.
Shoe carnival right here.
Yeah, right here. Yeah, I got. And his cousin was like, nah, man, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I didn't realize until, much later on what I was getting set up for. But that's how naive I am. Like, that.
Yeah, I definitely had to learn street knowledge at a later point in my life. Like, just being, I guess I would say, sheltered. Throughout high school, living in Naperville, and then just how life went afterwards, the street knowledge definitely hit me hard. But yeah, man, it's crazy. Like, what I was really thinking about was like these occurrences. Like, yeah, when people feel discomfort in public, but like times you've experienced people, intentionally being racist towards you, or intentionally, putting you on the spot.
Yeah.
Trying to get a reaction from you. Like, I feel like that's another point of discussion. I could say in my neighborhood, I was at my parents' house for the time being, but like I was told to walk the dog, right? So I'm at home. I go outside to walk the dog in the neighborhood I grew up in.
Ma, you should see his face right now.
And I'm just walking my dog Hazel down the street, and this SUV drives by, and you see three white kids from high school that I knew their faces because of high school. And I don't know if you've seen Get Out by Jordan Peele. The opening scene, there's a song played. Opening scene, what's the guy's name? He also was in
Stanfield. No, not Stanfield. What is? I know who
you want to talk about. That actor. Well, anyway, the opening scene, he's walking down the streets at night of a suburban neighborhood. I think he's like either walking to a party or from a party on the phone with someone. But a car pulls up, following him all slow, playing a song called Run Rabbit Run. And in that scene, he gets knocked over the head, thrown in the trunk. Yeah. That's how Get Out starts, right? So I'm walking my dog down the street, and these kids, I don't know, they know who they are, but they drive by me. And then I make eye contact with them. They make eye contact with me. And I mean, it's just like a cold stare I get. And, you know, 20 seconds later, they pull around the block playing Run Rabbit Run. And like, this was probably like a month or two after Get Out hit theaters. I'm not really sure. But I knew the song just because I knew how powerful that scene was. Yeah. And then, yeah, in that moment, I just felt like, you know, I was being tested. It was a lot of anger in that moment. Like, sometimes I'm glad my dog was with me because I could have just dropped the dog, run after the car, and, like, break a window. But it's like, but then again, what would happen if I did get myself in that situation, just acting right. out, kind of like acting out how they would want me to, or trying to see a nigga moment? Shout right. out to the Boondocks, if you don't know what I'm talking about. But, yeah, like, I was 19 when that happened. Just someone driving by, trying to reenact the scene, or, you know, trying to make a joke playing Run Rabbit Run in my neighborhood. That was...
Yeah, and again, like you said, not knowing the history behind it, like...
Right.
That...
Run Rabbit Run, lynchings, that's the history behind
it. Yeah, that's the history behind it. Like, man. Alright, so, story time with J.D. Flan. Anyway, it's like, again, like I told you, I went to D.C. schools because, you know, less racism, if any. My sister, on the other hand, went to Maryland school, and my mother is a teacher. She's a English teacher. And so my sister was taking this class. I think it was American literature or something like that. And, so my mom, all right, I gotta give a whole lot of backstory. Mm-hmm. Like, my mom, you know, grew up in the 60s. Like, she remembers vividly, you know, the MLK assassinations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think she joked all the time that she was probably on some like FBI list because she used to contribute to the Black Panthers and all these other organizations. And she's real militant. And I take back what I've said about her in the past. She's the most racist person I know. I do think she holds on to some prejudice. And I think she'll admit this, that like, you know, because of things she's seen and things she's experienced, she tends to not want to be around certain people because she feels that they don't really want her around. Kind of situation. But anyway, so she took this attitude into like my sister's schooling. So my sister was always getting put in these fucked up situations because my mom would be trying to be militant like through her. So she had this assignment to present some American poetry to the class. So my mother picks this Richard Wright poem, which is, I can't remember the name of the poem, but the poem is basically an extremely graphic depiction of a lynching.
Mm-hmm.
It talks about the people in the crowd and women putting lipstick on. It talks about like when they tar the body and the, you know, like tar falling from the body and pulling flesh and stuff. Like, it's intensely graphic, like poem about a lynching. And these are high school kids. Like, right. These are young kids, and my sister has to go and like read this poem and, you know, in front of the class. And it was one of the most traumatic events of all time for my sister, because she's, you know, a minority in the school. And I think the teacher ended up giving her like an F and saying that it wasn't a poem. And my mother, it just created another like argument, because my mother was like, here's the book I got it from, which is a book of American poetry, you know, like, just because it's a, I don't know, she thought, she didn't consider it a poem because the person was Black or the subject matter or whatever, but But yeah, that's what I grew up around, you know, a person that had these militant ideas and was kind of like almost pushing them on us a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I would be the one in the house like, no, my white people are looking at white people ain't never done nothing to me. Like, you know, I hadn't experienced it yet. And I don't think I still have had many direct situations with something. Or even I'm like so sensitized to it that it doesn't register. Like I just,
right, yeah,
I just let it go. But then, you know, then again, I am a black man in this country and I wake up every morning and see what can happen to me. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's like that just ingrained like fear. Like, yeah, I tell people for years, like, I don't jaywalk. I don't try to get the attention of police.
Right.
You know,
right.
I used to go to lunch with this dude, white dude, and we'd be in downtown D.C. and we passed some police officers and he'd be like, hey, officer, how you doing? And I'm like, man, can you stop? They wasn't looking at me. Like, don't bring their eyes over here. Dude.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, I don't want to give him a reason, but. I don't think he understood the difference in our world. Like, all right, I did have one interaction with the police, and they laughed at me. So, I ordered a pizza or whatever at my house. I had a condo in D.C., pretty expensive condo, and I ordered a pizza. But it was in a neighborhood where, like, the pizza man don't get out the car.
Right.
So, I'm standing outside my condo waiting on the pizza man. And I see an officer up the hill with the flashlight out, and he's looking for something. And then eventually I hear, like, over his little shoulder radio, like, you know, suspect is, like, 5'8", with jeans and a hoodie on or something like that. And I realize I'm wearing jeans and a hoodie. Like, that's a pretty generic description,
yeah.
Right? So eventually they see me, and he approaches me. And then, like, two more cop cars pull up. And they all, like, you know, coming out and approaching me. And I put my hands up, like, immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And he's asking, you know, where I live. I told him I live in the building. He's like, you got some ID on you? And I'm like, yeah. You know, can I get it? And then, like, he's like, yeah, you ain't get your ID. And so, like, I'm reaching for my, the whole time I'm doing it, I'm telling them what I'm doing. I'm mm-hmm. reaching for my wallet. I'm reaching for my mm-hmm. wallet. And they're laughing, like, dude, you don't have to do this. I'm like, yes, I do. And yeah, so I that was my interaction with the police, and even they didn't get it. Like, even some of them, either they got it and realized how funny it was, or some of them just didn't get it at all. It was like, man, you can quit, like, you can put your arms down now. And I was like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah, keep but them up. I did they understand, like, the conversations that, you know, black households have around interactions with the police? It is a conversation, yeah, in a black household. Like, I remember, this is around the Trayvon Martin incident, but, you know, just being told, when you get to the point of driving, Isaiah, make sure, you know, you keep your hands on the wheel. Always, always tell the officer what action you're going to take ahead of time before you reach for something. Always be respectful. Don't immediately be like, well, what'd you pull me over for, man? I mean, I only got pulled over once in Naperville, I haven't really, the interaction I had with the police, like, once was in Naperville, and my little sister was in the car with me. I was driving in the morning to school. I was running late. I was speeding probably 5 miles per hour over the speed limit, neighborhood speed limit, but I got pulled over, and immediately it was like, I looked at my sister, I was like, just sit there. And I really immediately went in this zone, like, all right, I mean, I wouldn't say I was fearful. I was just prepared. And, I mean, the interaction was fine. I may have perked up my voice a little bit, but I was like, hello, officer, yeah, how you doing? we were both cordial, and I just got a warning. I just explained that, I apologize. I'm late for school. I think it was actually morning practice, but, I'm sorry that I was going over the speed limit. He left me with the warning, blah, blah, blah. But in that moment, I knew I had prepared to have the license and registration in the compartment where it wouldn't look like I'm reaching, yeah, hands on the wheel. roll the window down with the left hand, keeping the other hand on the wheel. Hands always in sight.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the reality. Like, and, you know, you don't know if, I guess the term bad cop, you don't know if you're going to, you know, interact with the bad cop, but right. the fact that you have to prepare for it, you don't, you never know. That's the thing. Like, yeah. it's just, I don't know. It's just something to think about.
And I, again, that's the part I don't think that people get when they see situations like this and then they, you know, they try to find these justifications for it. Like the fact that in a black household, we train our children how to, in a fearful situation mm-hmm. with the police, how to keep their cool and act a certain way to try to make it out of the situation safely.
Right.
Like, we feel the responsibility to train our kids on how to safely interact with the police when a police officer who's supposed to be trained can just be like, oh, I got scared
mm-hmm.
and I shot him. And I'm like, okay, that's good. Yeah, yeah, all right. Yep. I understand that you had a reasonable whatever to be afraid or something. Like, well, we can't judge whether or not your fear was reasonable or not if you were afraid. Like, the fact that we put the impetus on, I hope that's the right word, we put that on a person, on a lay person, when the professional who's supposed to be trained to be able to be in these situations,
mm-hmm.
they can react based off fear and it's okay.
Right.
If we react based off fear, then we deserved what we got.
You know? Right.
Like, but I don't think, again, I don't either it's something that you don't get or you get it and you just don't care. And the fact that it keeps happening at this point is starting to push people toward that, more toward the idea that, nah, y'all get it. You just don't care.
Bro, I'm not gonna say they. Like, I guess, but people definitely understand that they have some type of privilege. I remember within the same week I was pulled over, right? Just talking with this one white girl at school, told her about the incident, and she literally said, she's like, wow, I'm surprised you got a warning. I was like, what? And she's like, honestly, I just, you know, flip my hair back, do some quick makeup when I get pulled over, and I know I'm going to get a warning or let off. I'm like, I don't know what I said. I just remember being, I don't know if it was angry, shocked that they were so aware.
Yeah.
She was so aware. But it's like, yes, they know that, you know, as a black person, the outcome, the expected outcome is that you don't get let off easy.
Yeah.
Like, one, she was surprised that I only got a warning. Two, she made a point that she knew she can, well, I guess the term would be, finesse her way out of the situation.
It's crazy. So, I mean, and that brings me to another point that I know we wanted to touch on is, so we're at the point now with this situation where we're seeing protests and we're seeing things in a lot of situations turn toward violence. And then the question is for a lot of people, like, violent or non-violent, violent, like, which is the way forward? And I think, you know, as we've been talking, one of the things that, like, that keeps echoing to me is that, like, the idea of talking it through, or the idea that it can be fixed somehow, through legislation and we vote the right people in mm-hmm. or we become more active in our communities or something like that. That idea is losing steam because, again, once we have to try to convince people that something is wrong in the first place,
right.
which seems ludicrous, which seems like I'm talking to somebody that don't speak the same language as me. So what's the point of me talking to them? You know, so it's like, all right, then what now? Like, if you don't understand language, you don't understand my words, you don't understand me kneeling, you don't understand a video,
mm-hmm.
you don't understand any of these, none of these things have touched you in a way that makes you want to change the situation. Well, then I got to find a way to touch you,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, I got to find a way to touch you that's going to eventually hit home and make right. you decide something's got to give.
Or open up the room for conversation, right. like, even and, consideration.
Yeah. And I use the Selma boycotts a lot when I had these conversations. It's like, you know, making people sit in the back of the bus because of their skin color was wrong,
mm-hmm.
you know. But saying that to people, that this is wrong, you should you shouldn't do this didn't stop them from doing it.
Right.
What stopped them from doing it was when they boycotted, they took their money out of that bus system, and then they realized, oh, you affecting our pockets now.
Right.
So now maybe we ought to do something about this because it's affecting us in a way we actually feel. And I think that's what people are looking for right now. Like, some of them. I know there's some people out there that's just, you know, when you give people a problem and no solution, like, is people are going to, I think people are going to act out. But there are also people that are saying, like, this, we tried it every other way. We tried to have this discussion with you every other possible way. And you still won't even admit there's a problem. Like, we ain't even at the point where we can all agree there's a problem. So what is the point of me, like, me talking has done nothing. Like, nothing. I can't even get you to acknowledge that there's a problem. Michael Che, I love when, like, comedians are the most insightful people in the world. But he has a bit where he's like, the fact that Black Lives Matter is a controversial statement is insane. Like, if I say Black Lives Matter, it should be, first of all, it's a statement. It's not a question. So it doesn't require a response. But if you have a response, it should be, yeah, they do matter. I agree. But the fact that, like, Black Lives Matter, you know, like, why is that a controversial statement? You know, like, is there somebody saying, they don't. what do you mean? Like, nah. Or, yeah, or this whole All Lives Matter or Blue Lives Matter. Like,
yeah, the rebuttals. Like, why do you have to make a rebuttal for a statement that's just trying to shed light upon the fact that a certain group of people are mistreated? It's like you said, there's people I feel are at, what do you want to call it? They've hit a boiling point. Like, the pressure has been building up before I even was born.
Right, before, like, I was born.
Yes, yeah. Like you said, you hear your mother talking about what she experienced with the civil rights movement, all of that. This has been going on for decades. I hate to say it, but it's been mistreatment for centuries. And every time we try to take a peaceful approach, or we try to educate, I don't even know if the word is educate, or just attempt to have people consider that something is wrong.
Yeah.
We get a rebuttal, right? And it happens over and over. And I think now we're seeing that this was the last straw. Like, something has to change. If it is violence right now, hopefully, I mean, honestly, I would say I hope that the violent acts don't harm anyone. But I think the uprising, long overdue. Like, it was inevitable. People have been hurting, and if you want to silence a group of people for that long, this is gonna happen. And now is the time. I mean, it's kind of unfortunate that now is the time people are starting to, I guess, hop on board or consider, when it's been going on, and there have been groups that have been trying to vocalize it, and no one pays attention until someone else is shot, someone else is killed by a cop. And there's so much more than police brutality. Like, it's a system designed to keep a people oppressed. And I feel like that's what's being shown right now. People are realizing nothing changed since Martin Luther King was walking in Selma, Alabama. Like, there's still people out there that are trying to discredit.
And we had it on tape back then.
Yeah.
It was on the news, cops beating the shit out of people trying, you know, walking down the bridge. You know,
cops spraying crowds of protesters today, yesterday. Cops spraying crowds of protesters. Kids being maced back then, kids being maced. Yeah. Dogs. Oh, man.
And then we talked about it, like, just in the way we see the media or some people look at it. Like, you were telling me about how they have the videos where they show, like, a group of soccer fans like rioting after a win,
right?
And then the people rioting in protest
of the situation, and the headlines are different,
but the outlook You know, the pictures look the same. It's cars on fire and things being flipped over and stuff being burned.
Places being looted, windows broken.
Yeah, and these are passionate fans, but in this situation, they're, you know, thugs. You know. And it's just like, yeah, you reach a point where, like, what are words worth? Like, that, I keep coming back to it because that's the part that hurt. That's the part that, to me, that makes it systemic, is that I can show you a horrific act being committed on video. I can show you a 9-minute long video where people are pleading with the officer because this man is dying to let him up or to just let up. And he looks oblivious to the issue. Like, he could care less.
He was so calm in that video.
And there are four officers there. It were four officers. The video, I think the perspective most people see is just the one officer on the guy's neck. There are two other officers holding down his midsection and his feet. And then there's an officer standing off to the side that's watching this. There's four officers, one man in handcuffs on the ground. They clearly have control of the situation.
Right.
So what the need was to keep a knee in his neck, I don't understand.
Which wasn't even protocol or wasn't even part of the training.
Okay.
By that police department. It was shared. That the knee
in the, knee in the neck is not
right.
That's not a sanctioned move.
No.
He got that off of WWE or something. But,
fake wrestling.
But we see this and we still can't convince. We still have the, you know, one of Trump's advisors coming on TV saying, nah, this is a couple bad apples. Like, how many apples? And then I saw that the other meme I like is if you have 1,000 good officers and 10 bad ones, and 1,000 good ones don't turn into 10 bad ones, then you have 1,010 bad officers. Mm. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if the guy with his knee on his neck is the bad guy, and the three other officers standing around watched it, heard the same people begging, you know,
and allowed it to happen,
then how are they any better?
Right.
Yeah. And I think you've had other cops even come out and say that and things that I've seen. So it's like, it seems like there has to be something in there that told all four of these officers that whatever was happening was okay. And whatever that is, it's got to change.
It's got to go.
And the only way it changes is if somebody first says there's something wrong. And this is what we can't seem to get people to say.
We can't get people to say, I agree with you. Let's discuss this. Have to first convince the person that this person was murdered.
Right.
The first, there's a debate about if the person was murdered or not. There's a debate if the cop is racist, if the cop acts out of hate. There's a debate if there was underlying medical conditions. That's what I'm saying. Like, the point, this video clearly showed George Floyd unconscious for at least 6 minutes. He was unresponsive, but someone was on his neck and they were holding him down in that moment. Like, that, forget what happened leading up to the video.
Right.
Just focus on what you see. And in what you see a man kneeling on another man's neck when he's unresponsive, calmly, like just letting it happen. He's being told, please let up. He's being told, you're killing him. He's being told, he said he can't breathe. 5 minutes ago, he said he can't breathe, but you're still on his neck.
Yeah.
Like this is about something wrong in people's hearts, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's something wrong in this country where someone feels they can get behind a badge and act out of hate, but they know that that badge can
protect them.
Can protect them, right? Yeah.
And I like that you say that, because that's the part that makes all of this very difficult for me in terms of trying to figure out the solution forward and why I think so many people are resorting to violence and stuff, because this is something wrong, like you said, in that person's heart. Like, if you can that calmly snuff out a life, like, and we're not talking about a person who is a threat to you at that point. He was no longer a threat. He's on the ground in handcuffs and is 4-1.
Unresponsive.
He's not a threat. And if you can, you know how angry you got to be to stay angry that long?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I've been in situations where I'm like on 10 and then like the situation calm down, and I don't want to calm down because I'm still angry. And even then, like, I don't have my knee on somebody's neck, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking about it, and I'm like, dude, I look stupid right now. I gotta come back. you know how much hate you gotta have? Like, I've never even punched somebody in the face as hard as I could. Like, I think anytime I've thrown a punch, mm-hmm. like, a second before it connected, I might have took something off.
Let's go 80%.
Yeah. Like, I just can't bring myself to do that. Mm-hmm. How desensitized do you... And this is why we have to say Black Lives Matter. Because you have to me, you have to not care about that life. Like, you, that life has to not matter to you for you to keep your knee on that person's neck for that long.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is a clear sign. And I don't know if it's because he's black. I don't know what it is about this man that you don't care about. But you showed that you don't care.
You through your actions, you showed that you had no problem kneeling on his neck for 6 to 7 minutes.
Right. When he got people
handcuffed, yeah, unresponsive.
You got gym teachers, you know, taking pictures with somebody on their neck, not recreating the situation in the exact. Like, I looked at that photo,
mm-hmm.
and you can see that person does not have their full weight on the knee.
Mm-hmm.
They're up on their toes. They're still putting a lot of weight on that back foot. Whereas if you look at the George Floyd videos, you can see that his foot is like turned to the side. He's not supporting himself at all mm-hmm. with his foot. He is holding himself up with his knee.
In that video, you see George Floyd alive. By the end of the video, you see him far gone. But people are still trying to...
It's just trying to rationalize. Yeah. Like, let me show
you. There's no way he could have died from a knee to the neck. He's dead in the video. And let's not be desensitized to death. You watch someone die. Like, it's sad that we have to publicly share that video to even get the conversation going. And that didn't even do it. Like, I honestly thought that would do it. Seeing someone just die on camera. But no, of course, people are going to try to rationalize. They're going to try to disprove what they saw in the video.
I'm glad you said it, because that's crazy. Like, you would think you should be able to say, hey, man, it was the situation, you know, where cops held this guy down with a knee in his neck for 9 minutes, and he's dead now. And people be like, whoa, what? That happened? Now people are like, let me see the video. Then they see the video. Oh, nah, ain't no way. But he was alive. But I'm saying, oh, nah, it was previous medical condition or something. It was abnormally something. The pavement, the asphalt was too high. I don't know, dog.
Oh.
But yeah, that to me is where the violence is coming. That's where, like, we're running out of options.
Running out of options.
I don't want to bring Kaepernick up, but my man took a knee for this very cause.
And they destroyed
it. You turned it into everything but what it was about.
Exactly.
Made it about the flag. Made it about the troops. Made it about all these issues that had nothing to do with it. And then now here we are. Again, be right back in this situation. Mm-hmm. What do you want us to do? Because you told us that taking a knee is the wrong thing to do. You told LeBron to shut up and dribble. You know, you've told us countless times that all of the ways we try to voice our grievances calmly, peacefully, nicely, you know, are not the right ways. So at this point, like, we're waiting for you to open up the conversation. Tell us what's the right way to protest.
Right.
Like, you do realize that a protest is supposed to make you uncomfortable, right? It's supposed to fuck with you a little bit. Like, it don't work. Sending you a bouquet of flowers is not a protest. That's not what's going to work.
Right.
You know, playing harder during the game and winning the Super Bowl is not going to,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's not going to get anything. It's got to be something that...
To grab their attention.
Yeah, grab their attention. Fucks with your pocketbook.
Yeah.
Pocketbook. I think I said that as a kid. Because I can. All right, man. I appreciate you being on the show and sharing your experience with us, talking through this crazy situation that we have mm-hmm. in the world. Right? Any final thoughts, anything you want to leave the folks with?
You know, just some... thank you for having me as a guest. And just, you know, in the past couple of days, something I've been thinking about, like, yes, even though there's a ton of acts of violence and chaos going on in the world right now, I hope what comes out of it is a realization that just love and tolerance needs to happen in order to reach peace. Like, if you can't love your neighbor, is it hard? Is it so hard just to tolerate them? Like, not, you know, intentionally act out in hate, not intentionally voice hate, just tolerance. Like, if you can't, if you don't feel to the point where you can't say you love your fellow man or woman, just be kind. That's really it. Like,
yeah, just right. Just be nice, man.
Yeah, just be nice, man. Just acts of kindness and yeah. Love
like,
and tolerance.
Like I said, it costs you nothing to pay no attention. Like, you
exactly.
Just let it be.
Right.
Like, just, I don't know. Yeah, there's been a, man, what is the Baldwin? I can't think of his first name all of a sudden.
But, who?
Last name is Baldwin.
James Baldwin.
James Baldwin.
Thank oh,
you.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, but there's I was listening to it in the Add 2 album, the whole thing about just the lack of the death. I think he said like the death of the heart,
mm-hmm.
like the lack of empathy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that to me is the real issue. Like that is the real issue. That if you can look at what's happening, and if you can look at what at these videos and it doesn't. You don't feel anything, like you don't feel that something is wrong, like that may you may need to maybe evaluate yourself a little bit. Make sure that's in line with all of the things that you know you believe are your ideals and your principles, because it's hard for me to see this stuff right now and imagine that there are people who can look at it and like, nah, that's justified completely.
Yeah,
like,
this nation morally. It's out of whack, man.
Out of whack.
Just the, you know, it's as simple as just being kind, showing love, compassion. But then again, if you can't do that, all you got to do is pay it no mind.
Pay it no
just
mind.
Just tolerate. Like, yeah. Just be hey, able to we, exist hey, next to another individual.
We practice that right here and there. All the time. All the time. Oh man. But yeah, all right, so... Let's tell the people what you got going. How they can find you, because you are a fitness guru. I'm gonna be one of your first clients, or if not, one of your many clients.
In the first in person client, I think I'm in person training something.
All right.
I'm gonna get into as well. But you can find me on Instagram at Zaya Fitness. That's ZAYAH Fitness. No underscores.
All right.
No periods. But
none of that fluff, no filler.
Just yeah, straight, yeah, straight up. Just straight up. Keep it simple. And yeah, I do online training, and that's launching in June. I've been, you know, helping people out as best I can through, you know, COVID and then just the times of being stuck at home. But, you know, fitness as well as nutrition is a passion of mine. And for me personally, that's what has helped me, you know, come out of some pretty tough times. And I'm, you know, putting a lot of my energy into that, just helping others through that medium. And if you're interested in any type of training or nutritional advice, hit me up. Yeah, but once again, Jared, I really appreciate you having me on here and just, you know, providing the opportunity to talk about these issues, because besides the generational gap, man, like it's something we live through. Something we experience on a day-to-day basis, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like now is a very pivotal point in history where it's time to voice feelings. So thanks again, and glad to be a guest. I'll be back.
Yes, definitely gotta have you back.
But yeah, it's been great, man.
Nah, man, yeah, I appreciate you, and just lending another perspective, you know, a perspective of another generation, because you keep bringing that shit up. But yeah, like you said, you know, it's a lot going on right now. And just all I've ever wanted this podcast to be is a place where people could, a safe space where people could come, express themselves, talk about whatever,
mm-hmm.
And we could get it out a little bit. Hopefully that's, you know, we've been able to do some of that today. And for anybody listening, you know, maybe you've been able to find some sort of release through the conversation. But yeah, as always, I appreciate you guys listening. Please, you know, send me your feedback. flan@whatistws.com. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all at whatistws. Hit up the website, whatistws.com. Buy a shirt. Burn it if you didn't like the episode, whatever. Videotape it. It's all good. I appreciate all feedback, positive and negative. But yeah, man, let's just, all lives do matter, but we really need right now, my community could use, this country just admitting that Black Lives Matter too. Right. Not taking anything away from anybody else.
Right.
We just want to matter as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, right now that's not how we feel.
Right.
So with that being said, yeah, until we speak again, be safe, be the light.
Yep, much love, everybody.
Let's rock out.
Rob a man, kidnap him, take him for all his rights. Degrade him all his life, rape his daughter, his wife. 9 months later, used the baby as piranha bait. We wasn't even allowed to pray, let alone read or write. People like Cube open them doors, and politically correct Negroes like you close them to keep your ice. Platform, they make you feel like they love you there. Your whole platform could swim with the fishes like Huggy Bear.
Your Maybach in your house is like that important that you won't move at all.